1978, South African expatriate drummer Louis Moholo put together an octet that included himself, of course, and two of his countrymen and five European musicians, and gave them room to shine, each in his own way. The result was this vibrant piece, Moholo's own composition, You Ain't Gonna Know Me 'Cause You Think You Know Me. This was written in memory of trumpet player Mongezi Feza. It's from Moholo's 1978 album, Spirits Rejoice. And I thought it would have been a nice way of easing ourselves into a discussion today about the great lady. Winnie Madikizela, I never get it right, Madikizela, Winnie Madikizela Mandela, who died yesterday afternoon at a hospital in Johannesburg after a long illness, will be honored with a state funeral on April the 14th, President Cyril Ramaphosa announced yesterday. The announcement touched off new waves of emotion over whether such an honor should be bestowed on the nation's former First Lady, a freedom fighter who came to be known as the mother of the nation, but who also emerged as a central figure in several major plots to grab power and ruthlessly target her political enemies. However history sees Winnie Mandela, it cannot erase her role in the struggle against apartheid in South Africa and beyond its borders. I'll concede today, as I think we all should, that we do not know all there is to know about this extraordinary woman. We don't know nearly all that we need to know, because so much in her life has been hidden, so much in her life has been distorted, and so much in her life has not yet been known. She never talked about it until later in her life, and she clearly did not like the idea of speaking of herself as an extraordinary person or as a star. This was the furthest thing from her mind. So we will concede today that we do not know all there is to know. We do know some things, but I'd like us to figure out, if we can, what would you say, what do we say her place is in history, despite the fact that we don't know everything? What is her place in history? And how do you, what sense does her life make to you? And not just her life, but what she did with her life. Does it make sense to you? What value do we get from it? You know, everybody has a history. Everybody has a reason for being here. And some people are just exceptional in the way they go about the business of fulfilling their history. And I suspect that Winnie Mandela was one of them, as was her former husband, Nelson Mandela. But we also have to look at how these lives unfolded in the midst of what can only be described as hell. They were born and raised. They still struggle to do the things that everybody would do, get a college education, try to get a good job and live a quote normal life, but look at the environment. Look at what you had to deal with every single day. Invaders came into the country, took everything, and took control of everything and everyone. An appalling system of rigid segregation known as apartheid was installed and ruthlessly maintained by military force. And this is how people had to live. They owned nothing. They were in charge of nothing. And that was the everyday experience. And what is coming back at you from the minute you wake to the minute you go to sleep, the whole day consisted of a psychological and sometimes an actual physical war. I don't know how people lived this way and managed somehow by some miracle to maintain their sanity. And these invaders who came in and took everything, everything on the land, everything on it, in it, under it, over it, and around it, and received very loyal support from nations in the world that extolled the virtues of their governments and the virtues of democracy. They even came in and trained soldiers in how to kill off as many people as possible, how to subvert any effort being made to simply affirm their rights in their own country. I mean, it is so surreal. You can't even begin to put your brain around it. So I thought we would look at Winnie Mandela from a distance, which is where we have been with Winnie Mandela all this time. I think spiritually, and in so many other ways connected, psychologically, emotionally connected to her and the people of South Africa and their struggle. But we have so much work to do, I think. I know I do. Much more reading to do to be competent to discuss the specifics of Winnie Mandela from a historical point of view. Of course, running a newspaper, you get reports and so forth, and you think you know something. You don't know anything. The best you could surmise is that you're reporting on what some sane people said. You know, people who manage to keep their brains around them while all hell is breaking loose. So I would like us to just discuss Winnie Mandela from that perspective today. To the extent that we knew her, to the extent that we understand her role in the freedom struggle, to the extent that we understand a whole lot of other things that are intertwined in the massive effort of just trying to remain sane every day while under blistering psychological, economic, political, and all other forms of tyranny. How do we look at her from this distance? It would really be interesting to know how we came to know her. And even how we believe we know her now, despite the fact that we really can't count on the veracity of a lot of accounts. But just the same, this is how the world works sometimes. You are living in your patch of craziness here, and other people are living in their patches of craziness. And through news reports, we think we know exactly what they're going through. We have it in our own country. Do we know how people in Sacramento are actually feeling from day to day? Do we know what it means to be very poor in the United States? Have we seen poverty in the United States? I did, and I have, and I can tell you, no report suffices to communicate what that level of poverty is. I've seen poverty, I've traveled extensively, but that level of poverty in the United States, it just jolted me. I still haven't gotten over it. Just as an aside, I remember we went one day, I had a photographer. She was from the New York Times, but she really was Harold Washington's personal photographer. And we went on an assignment to cover how life is lived in the poorest region of America. And there was this family we were covering. And the family was a huge one, more than 30 members living in a two-room house under the guidance of a matriarch, their old grandmother, who was confined to bed. Now, remember I told her, it's a two-room shack with no running water, no electricity, no toilet, and several broken windows that had never been fixed. No heat. And as we approached this house, it looked like, you know how in movies you look at, or you're walking down the road, a very hot road in the summer, and you see the shimmer of heat rising out of the pitch, rising out of the earth. That was the kind of impression one got approaching this house. And it looked like the whole yard was moving. It gave that illusion that it was moving. And in a way, it really was, because the yard was full of maggots. The yard was just riddled with maggots. And I had never seen something like that. And you had to control yourself. So we saw poverty up close in a way that most Americans have never, ever seen it and will never see it. And you can't convince people that, yes, it does exist. And yes, people do live like this every single day. So we're going to be talking about Winnie Mandela today. From your own perspective, while we get down to the business of doing a lot more reading in order to understand her and in order to get a more accurate fix on who she was, and what she was about, and how she lived, how everybody lived in South Africa. So let's hear what you're thinking today about Winnie at 888-874-4888. What was your first introduction to this woman? What manner of woman was she in your introduction to her? What did you make of this woman? What did you think might have been her life? Johnny from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello, how are you? Good
yeah,
afternoon to you.
Thank you so much. I'm doing quite well. I came in late on the call, but I'm really very interested in your discussion on Winnie Mandela. She was a stalwart supporter of her husband for many, many years. Movement to free black people in South Africa. So she is an icon, and yes, she has her detractors, and we all have our faults, but I think the history will prove that she was essential to the rise of modern South Africa, and hopefully that will continue into the future as well.
Do you recall how she came to your attention? What was the occasion in which she came to your attention and you first were introduced to Winnie Mandela?
Well, for me, it would have come when I was in college and there was the divestiture or divestment movement that many universities and even cities were having. And it was very prominent at my school. And so I really wasn't very familiar with her before that. But I knew that she was cited and heralded as someone who was leading the effort to free blacks in South Africa, and also her role in the ANC.
So what was the divestment movement? How did you come to learn about it, and what did you know about it?
Okay. Well, I went to a little college up in Connecticut in New Haven. It's very well known, and for better or worse. I have my own sort of view on that. But as an African-American and being a student at that school and being a part of the black student movement, the African-American Student Union, so to speak, there, we were a part of with other groups on campus to basically encamp one of the main areas on the campus right across from the president's residence, actually the president's office, not his residence. And that went on for many months where we had our own version of shanty towns, a sort of an encampment there on what's called Beinecke Plaza. And being students, we would have our own protests and speakers and rallies that were trying to convince the so-called corporation of the university to divest many of its many, many, many millions of, if not billions of dollars from South Africa.
So, and she was the agent through which you first came to know about this movement and South Africa?
I wouldn't say the first, but certainly among the first. There are many others who were in the ANC movement. Their names are the Bishop Tutu and many others that I can't recall at this moment that were maybe, I won't say her counterparts. Some of them, I think, were against her. And as a woman who had such prominence, especially being the wife of Mandela, you know, she certainly commanded at that time and even afterwards, and even up to this time, a huge following. And so I think that's how I really became to become familiar with her and her role, but essentially her role as the wife and longtime supporter of her husband that really kind of drove efforts for his release behind the scenes.
Mm. But it informed you also as a student. You got a larger view of what was going on with black people in a whole other part of the world. Do you think you would have connected with South Africa and South Africans had it not been through the introduction of Winnie Mandela?
Well, yes. I was very fortunate in that as a student, even before I grew up in the D.C., Maryland area, went to a very diverse high school. I had friends who were from all over the world, from Africa, from Haiti, from South America, from Israel. But in school, in college in particular, a very close friend of mine who is from Ghana made me keenly aware of the struggles of not only people in his country, but throughout Africa and especially South Africa. And also I was able to take some courses in South African history under, I believe the professor's name was Leonard Thompson, who is a European expert, so-called expert, from his standpoint, on the history of South Africa, even before the colonial era of the Boers and so forth.
Well, what do you think now? She has died. She died yesterday. What are your feelings
yes.
now?
My feelings are that we need to review. First of all, I need to appreciate her life and what she has offered, especially in her standing by her husband through thick and thin over many, many years. I believe it's like 27 years that Mandela was in prison, something like that.
Yes, 27. Yes, it was 27.
It was, okay. I got that right. And so, and so just being a leader for her people, a leader especially for other women in Africa in particular, I believe that I may be wrong on this, that several years later, I think even in this new millennial, in the 2000s, that there was a conference of African women on the continent. And I believe that she may have had some role in that, if not being a participant in it. So I'll have to review that just for clarity's sake on my part. But she is an icon. I think she will be remembered along with her husband as the true foundation of modern South Africa and indeed the continent itself.
Well, thank you. And what you gave us was a kind of personal history. You talked about how you personally became aware of this apartheid struggle, and it made you appreciate her and her role in a particular way. Thank you so much, John, for getting us started today. Rosedale, New York, we have Jose.
Greetings, my professor.
Hello. Hello, Jose. How are you today?
Not bad. And as always, you know, I always wish you ancestral blessings, and may they continue to watch over you and protect you always.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So what? How
yeah,
did
go ahead,
you
sir.
Get to know about Winnie Mandela? And when once you did get to know about her, what kinds of opinions were forming in your head?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that once again, Africa and its people has been dealt a devastating blow. We have lost a champion. And these type of individuals, they don't come by too often. And she is one of those rare individuals that has stood up. She stood out among all men and women for what she stood for, the courage and her consciousness. It is something that it doesn't come by too easy. And so we are here mourning and suffering a great loss. I was aware of the struggle on the continent, and South Africa to be precise. I am from the Caribbean, Jamaica to be exact. And we were very much a part of the anti-apartheid struggle from Michael Manley days and so forth. We were always out front against what was happening in South Africa. And so that is not anything new to us. And I grew up in that mode. I grew up with a passion and a hatred for injustice, for evil, for white supremacy, all these types of imperialism. I have this great hatred for it. And I saw this sister. She stood up to the worst that the apartheid system threw at her. And she was the Mandela, not Nelson. She was the Mandela that made that struggle, that stood up and fought against that struggle in South Africa. And I was very, very upset and disappointed and set back when I saw how her husband, her former husband, and the ANC, how they collaborated with that evil and wicked system in South Africa to try to neutralize this woman. She had so great, her plans and her dreams and her aspiration for South Africa was never realized because it was being undermined by that same ANC that has given us Zuma and Ramaphosa and all these rascals that have enriched themselves from the coffers of the people's money. And when I look and I see how these fellows, they have made themselves so rich and living in a life of grandeur of the funds that is supposed to go in the development and the advancement of the people of South Africa. And watch them sit back and see how this lady has been vilified and neutralized. It was very heartbreaking for me. And when I heard yesterday of her passing, I a kind of gloom came over me, and I'm wondering what is going to happen to us as a race of people. What is happening to us? Why can't we see what the system has set forth for us as a people? This lady could see it, and that is what she was up against. Not only the apartheid regime in South Africa, but she was up against those charlatans that look like her and look like us. And that is what she was up against. And when I saw Nelson Mandela standing up there and accepting a Nobel Peace Prize with de Klerk, and they can forgive these white racists for what they have done with the blood dripping off their lips and off their hands, and for what they have done, the many lives, the countless African lives they have taken, and they have forgiven them. Bishop Tutu, with his treacherous self, vilified that lady. And he stood up and has forgiven the apartheid regime for what they have done to our people. And today, I'm watching to see how all these hypocrites, all these charlatans are going to be coming out from under all these rocks to say nice things about this lady when she was alive and they had the opportunity to stand up with her, and to fight against this evil system down there. They didn't do so. Everybody went to and tried to carve out their few pieces of silver to enrich themselves. And they're coming out now. I'm waiting. I'm going to see all of them coming out and talking all this good stuff about this lady. And they had the opportunity in her real life to do the things to turn that country around, and they didn't do it. And so, my professor, my heart is heavy laden. And nothing any of these posts can say about Winnie can change my mind about the integrity and the courage of this great woman. And I hope this is something that we must teach our children and children's children about those who have fought for us, who have died, given their all for our people. We must remember them. Don't go out there and spend our money on this Wakanda mythological film out there. We have the heroes and the sheroes among us to teach our people, to inspire our people, and let them know who they should emulate and the kind of life that we should live as a race of people. If we don't have the integrity to stand up and support those who have shed their blood on our behalf, then I don't know where we are going as a race of people. And I hope the God of our ancestors will bless her and guide her spirit. And may she live forever in the hearts of those of us who understood and knew what she stood for and supported her. And we will continue to support the cause of justice and liberation for the cause for the rights of African people, wherever we are as a people. And that is my little piece, my professor.
But do you accept that she made some strategic errors, and they were quite significant errors? Do you dismiss that?
She is only human. We are all human beings, and we are susceptible to making mistakes. But why is it when our people make some errors, we find it so hard to forgive and to move on? But we can forgive the enemies who to this day are still persecuting us. They still have their boots on our necks and strangling us. And their aim is to keep us in the condition that we are in. And we have already forgiven them. But we can't find it in our soul to forgive those of our people when we make errors. Sometimes it's not deliberate errors, but we have made errors. But we can't find it in our soul to forgive ourselves. What is wrong with us? Why is it so hard to forgive each other, embrace each other, and move on and learn from our mistakes? Why? I've forgiven all of those people that have done us, or people who have done us wrong. We just have to learn from our experience and move on. But those who are still doing things to us, and still plan to do things, and are still doing things to us, we have embraced them, we are working with them, we have forgiven them. So why is it so hard to forgive each other?
Well, it's still a point. And the point being that we can't just see the good and ignore the other things, because other things were quite serious. But I take your point, too, that many people have done many very, very bad things. Mm-hmm. And it's as if they never even happened. It's as if they've been forgiven. Even if a huge section of the community says, no, we don't forgive them, they seem to say, well, we're in a position to write these things off, and we've written them off, so let's move ahead. So your point is well taken there. But at mm-hmm. the same time, what would you say was her most significant contribution in terms of where South Africa was and where it had to go?
Mrs. Mandela was of the opinion that the land of South Africa belongs to the African people. The land was taken from the African people, and her plans for South Africa is that African people would be free to control the resources of their land, their dignity and their respect, and to have the right to go in the direction that they want to go in, not to be told and to be directed by others. And that is where I saw Mrs. Mandela, the goals and the dream that she had for South Africa. And that is why I believe that she was the Mandela that should have taken South Africa into the future. Not her husband, because he was too compromised. The entire ANC group of people was compromised by the apartheid regime in South Africa. To this day, they are still compromised by them. And Mrs. Mandela did not yield. She had no intention of giving in to those group of people. And that, to me, are the attributes that I will always respect and admire in her. We have a propaganda. There was a propaganda war going on Mrs. Mandela. And the ANC, they were all complicit in the hatchet job that was being done on this lady. And we have to be able to see through the propaganda machine that was there going from all the Western papers and media, from the United States to Britain to Europe, they were all against about destroying this woman, because they knew that she was the Mandela that had the cojones, the backbone to stand up to the apartheid regime. Not her husband, and not the ANC, Ramaphosa and Zuma and Mbeki and these people. They were accommodationists. They were people that has compromised the African people. Everybody's making compromises on the backs of African people. Everywhere we go, where compromises are made, it is always made on our backs. Nobody else's back, but our backs. And those are the attributes I believe that she stood for. I love that lady. I respect her. And her members will always stay strong with me. And that is where it should be with us as African people. We must understand what we are in, what we're up against. And as Mr. Garvey said, it should be one aim, one goal, one God, one destiny, and race first. This multicultural foolishness that they're talking about in South Africa, it has not worked for us, and it never will work. All right? It must be one, the African race. It is time we start looking about our interests and stop thinking about this multiculturalism. It is not going to work for us, because we are going to multiculturalize ourselves out of existence.
Well, quite an opinion, and I thank you for it. I thank you also for taking us through your analysis of why Winnie Mandela is significant. People may or may not agree, but I think you did a very good job of defining her uniqueness and her place in history, in South Africa and outside of it as well. Thanks, Jose, for your call today. 888-874-4888. Now, understand me well. We're not attempting here to write the history of Winnie Mandela. That's not what we're going to do. But we do want to get a sense of a people's history, how people connect with historical figures in a particular time, and why. What are they looking for? What resonates with them? And therefore, that too is a part of history. Why do we connect with Winnie Mandela? Why do we think of Winnie Mandela in a particular way? No matter what is said, this too is a valid part of history. So we appreciate how people see historical persons in historical time. You know, it's a really interesting thing. My first exposure to Winnie Mandela was when I was, you know, just starting out in the journalism business. And I heard about this lady and I saw interviews. I saw discussions about her. There was a big circle of interest in New York City. And the anti-apartheid movement was forming itself into a formidable opponent. And in fact, John started us off today talking about the divestment movement. I was in college too at that time. And it was remarkable that people began to talk about it as if it was like another state. You know, until that time, you got the sense that Africa was such a faraway place. And what was going on in Africa was no big deal to us. We were in New York. We have subways. We are the it town. But sooner than you knew, we began to talk about this South African effort to aid South Africa, to lobby for South Africa, to use whatever influence we have in the interest of promoting and defending the interests of South Africans. And then I got to understand this word apartheid. And it was a big thing at that time to just use the word apartheid and what it really meant, how people were forced to live because of this national policy and what the government was doing, aided and abetted by other governments, to subjugate the entire South African nation. And that's how I got to know about Winnie Mandela. And then I had the ability to listen to some of her speeches, excerpts from some of her speeches and interviews. And I said, wow, this lady is something else. You know, I can't imagine that I would have to live under such blistering attack every single day and still sound somewhat sane. You know, I couldn't imagine that. And then when I went into the newspaper business and got more and more involved in it, I saw what the struggle was, because it was not just in South Africa. It was all over Africa. And it mushroomed. But the first person I must tell you, the first person that got me interested in the modern dilemmas of Africa was Winnie Mandela and her thoughts. It's a very fascinating thing that here she is. She has a revolutionary view. She is holding her own in a male-dominated society. All these things, you know, people would want you to just kind of forget, but you can't forget them. These are important things. And she was fearless. I think that's one word I could certainly say applies to Winnie Mandela. Absolutely fearless. Especially in the face of attack, especially in the face of opposition. She was fearless and devoted to the idea that the people must prevail. The people must prevail. And there has to be continual resistance. Let's take this short break. Actually, we have a little bit of time, so, but we don't have calls in queue. So let's take this as a short break and come back, and we'll come back after that. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Utrecht Lead, and we're talking today about our own history of Winnie Mandela, how we got to know her, how we got to know about the struggle that she was so much a part of, and what do we make of her? Not that it's up to us to make anything of her. She made something of herself. But it is important, I think, as we recognize that we don't know enough. We have to do a lot more reading in order to fill out this void around Willie Mandela that we should be very keen to fill out. But history is also how people resonate, or how leaders resonate with the people. It's a very important ingredient in how we live as a society. Eric from Albany, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice.
Hello.
I don't really have much to add about Winnie Mandela, but I want to mention an amazing movie that was produced in Denmark, of all places, in 1962, called Dilemma. And it was filmed in Johannesburg, and it was the first time that they had gotten movie cameras into the townships. And it's about a story about a British businessman who is transferred to Johannesburg, and he falls in love with a black woman, and he runs head on into all of the racial apartheid system, and it really is an eye opener if you aren't really familiar with the apartheid system and how people had to live in those days. And I would just recommend it to anybody who wants to know more about that.
Okay. Thank you for calling and contributing.
It was written by Nadine Gordimer, based on her novel.
Thank you, Eric, for calling in today. From Brooklyn, Noel, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, Yatrice. I tuned in a little late. Can you please expound upon, you said Winnie made some mistakes. I'm not sure exactly what mistakes she made. If you could talk about that, please.
Well, organizationally, I mean, you look at how organizations work, and some decisions that she made were outside of the organization itself. And in my view, too, you could appreciate the fact that she did this from her perspective out of necessity, because they were dead set against us about anything that she put forward on the table, and committed to dismissing them. And she was very much incensed about the fact that the ANC seemed to have lost its way, and it needed to do more to communicate to the people what was going on. It began to be a situation, but from her perspective, that people, the organization was becoming bureaucratized, and therefore, when it should have been aggressive, it chose not to be aggressive, because it did not want to, to be saddled with the blame of creating violence.
Oh, so like, for example, the Truth and Reconciliation Committee? Is that one example?
That was one, but I'm talking about the earlier days of the ANC. It had these ideals, and then came the inevitable question. On the matter of military strategy, where was the ANC? And it outright rejected any kind of a military action.
Oh, didn't we have Cuba with us, Yatrice?
I'm sorry?
Did we not have Cuba with us on that?
Well, the thing is that this is what's happening as we're talking about it. This is what's happening within the organization. These were the kinds of conversations that were going on.
What is your feeling on the Reconciliation Committee?
Well, you know, reconciliation, the way they defined it, especially Desmond Tutu and others. I mean, I thought that first of all, it was way too soon to discuss reconciliation. Secondly, what are you reconciling if you don't have power?
Good point.
Okay, so you have no power, but you're reconciling, which is to say you are expunging the blame and the responsibility. If anybody wanted to reconcile, it should have been the apartheid government.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have put on the table all the things that they're willing to do. They're not keen on independent political leadership. They certainly aren't keen about incorporating Africans in the control of the country, the political control of the country, and the economics, forget it. They're not sharing. So what is the reconciliation about?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I don't want to hold up because I know you're getting close to the top of the hour. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Noel. This was a major problem with the reconciliation, and it has happened exactly that way in every country that had gone through a disastrous internal turmoil. And then we come to a point where everybody wants, you know, nice, nice, happy, happy, as if that's going to solve a problem. It doesn't. When you get to the point of reconciliation, and this was Winnie's point, what do you have is leverage. Any union organizer would tell you that. You go in to negotiate a contract, but from a position of strength. You don't go in to negotiate a contract when the other side knows that you have no leverage whatsoever. You're joking. So this was, I mean, there were several clashes, ideological clashes, over major questions. How do you achieve parity, which is not what Winnie wanted at all? Parity was not something that she wanted. She wanted the ownership of the country in every sense of the word to devolve back to the people who own the country, not to the Boers. She wanted, and this was a major, major schism within the ANC, because in many ways the ANC was afraid to further antagonize the powers that be. They wanted a negotiated settlement. And it was not possible from Winnie's point of view because so much damage had been done, for which the other side had absolutely no intention of apologizing for or making up for or in any way conceding that these things were wrong. So it is a point of contention, no question about it. Donita from Brooklyn, you have just a tiny bit of time, I'm afraid.
Hi. Utrice.
Hello.
I was listening. Hello, Utrice. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
I was listening to you explaining how you got introduced to Winnie Mandela. I, too, was part of the divestment movement when it was introduced to us here in New York. I remember divesting out of corporations that were doing business in there, Reebok and a whole bunch of other corporations. And that was my introduction, too, to the how powerful we were if we was committed to a movement for people who look like us. And this was long before the internet. We had no way of connecting through that source of media. But the word got around. The word got out. We was here in New York rallying for it. I do hair, and I was able to do the cast of Serafina I did braids in their hair, and I felt so proud to be a part of that and have them come here. And looking at the warrior spirit that was in those children of South Africa that took to the street, unlike our children here who took to the street just recently, they totally were used in a movement so that you didn't realize that the anniversary of the wars here that we took on the Middle East was happening, and they're fighting for gun control. So they definitely was put to sleep here. Those children over there were warrior children, were shot down in the street, and they was represented by a movement that far reached anything like an internet. So I just think that Winnie Mandela, she was a warrior sister. She was the one who told us about her man being in jail. And then for him, like the brother said, come out of jail to be co-opted by a system.
Well, that's my cue. You hear the music in the background. But I'm so glad that you were able to come get in and give us a little bit of your thinking about Winnie. Thank you so much. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crowe. We'll see you tomorrow.